Welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, I'm really glad you've decided to join us. In Lansing, our state capital, we send elected representatives there to do the people's bidding, to move agendas that reflect the priorities of our voters and our residents here in the state of Michigan. But individual citizens have really never had the same sway over lawmakers as lobbyists, professional advocates who are paid to represent various business or social interests. The relationship between those lobbyists and lawmakers is really important. In many ways, it's how things get done, not just in Lansing, but in any state capital and even in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. But those relationships can also cross the line. And that happens when powerful lobbying interests use money to essentially buy the interests, the favors of our elected officials. It's a fine line, and sometimes it's kind of murky. And here in the state of Michigan, it's clouded in part by the lack of legislation and rules around transparency and ethics in the legislature. But lately, we have been learning a lot about how these relationships work through an unfolding scandal around former Speaker of the House, Lee Chatfield, who was once a rising star in the state Republican Party. Investigators for the Attorney General's office suspect that Chatfield is involved in a, quote, criminal enterprise that may involve embezzlement, bribery, tax evasion, and misconduct in office. And an awful lot of what's suspected of this former speaker has to do with his relationship with lobbyists. As leader of the lower house in Lansing, he wielded a broad range of powers to make things happen. And some people are saying that he did that for private interests that may have been doing him economic favors. That's stuff that is clearly across the line. But what exactly do we know about the misconduct that Lee Chatfield may have been indulging while he was in office? What activities are at the heart of this investigation? Did Chatfield abuse his power as a representative and as House Speaker? And even bigger question, what does this reveal about Lansing and the way things work? How historically significant is this particular investigation? And what does it tell us about what we might need to do with regard to transparency and ethics when it comes to the people we send to Lansing to represent the people? That's where we want to begin the conversation today. What's going on with this scandal around the former speaker, and what does it say about how things get done in our state capitol? We've got two great guests here to help us unpack all of this. Craig Mauger covers state government and politics for the Detroit News. He's a pretty frequent guest here on the show, and he's really at the forefront right now of the reporting on this story, including a piece Monday that you, if you have not read, really need to go back and take a look at. It digs very deeply into what Craig knows about what's going on with the investigation into the former speaker. Craig, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Also with us is Rick Pluta. He is a senior state capitol correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network. He is a longtime state political reporter and somebody who has an incredible amount of perspective and can bring real context to the things that are being discussed about Lee Chatfield and what goes on in Lansing. Rick, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen. Good morning, Craig.
So, Craig, I'm going to start with you. The story that you wrote yesterday really lays out a very intricate set of relationships, I guess, that Lee Chatfield is alleged to have had with some prominent lobbyists in Lansing. Tell us what the sum total of all of this is. What's at stake here? What was he involved in, and why is it of interest to the Attorney General's office.
Yeah, totally. I mean, first off, I would say that the State House Speaker in Michigan wields enormous power. They get to set the agenda for one of the, you know, bodies of the legislative branch in our state government. What we found by looking into these relationships for many months is that Lee Chatfield received a series of personal benefits from either the lobbying firm GCSI or clients of the firm GCSI while he was in the legislature and while he was Speaker of the House. Meanwhile, while he was receiving those personal benefits, he provided repeatedly favorable treatment to pieces of legislation that GCSI was advocating for. And often these were bills that would seem to go against what Lee Chatfield's political philosophy had been as a conservative Republican, which is what he ran as. So we're looking at all of that, and we're looking at how this relationship impacted things that, you know, details that affect all of our lives. I mean, these things don't happen in a vacuum. Lawmakers are there working on policies that then impact all of us. So this has an effect on people across the state.
Yeah. So tell me a little more about the firm that that is involved here, the lobbying firm, and tell me about its relationships in Lansing more broadly. Lee Chatfield is not the only legislator that this firm deals with. And I'll say up front, look, there's nothing illegal or even unethical about the idea of lobbyists and people who pay people to go to Lansing and advocate on their behalf. But this is a firm that if you know anything about politics in Lansing and government, it's a familiar name.
Totally. And, you know, lobbying is something that is protected in our Constitution as a right to, you know, seek a redress of grievances with your government. At the state level in Michigan, there are about a dozen, maybe about 20 multi-client lobbying firms that represent an array of clients. And what happens is when these firms take on, you know, 100 clients at a time, major forces in politics, the University of Michigan, the city of Detroit, businesses like Blue Cross and Blue Shield, Consumers Energy, when you put all of those together and you have one firm, and this happens with a variety of businesses based in Lansing, when you have one firm representing all of them, it combines to represent significant political power, where lawmakers really have to think twice about going against the firm, because it might not just affect their ability to legislate because they went against one entity. You know, if they make the firm angry, the firm and its clients could turn against them in a variety of ways. So, I mean, what happens at the end of the day is these firms have enormous sway in Lansing. Lawmakers come and go under term limits, but these firms remain. And they look to build relationships with legislators. And in the case of Lee Chatfield, we had a situation where Speaker Chatfield had an extremely close relationship with members of the firm Governmental Consultant Services Incorporated.
And the things that Chatfield is alleged to have been doing with this firm, be specific about the things that raise eyebrows here, the things that go beyond the normal interactions that we see between legislators and lobbyists.
Yeah, so we know that the Attorney General's office has noted a couple of things. One, there was some type of arrangement involving Lee Chatfield, his brother Aaron Chatfield, and Gary Owen, according to the allegations from the Attorney General's office, in which there were Adderall purchases made and delivered to Gary Owen involving Aaron Chatfield in an arrangement that was apparently initially set up by Lee Chatfield. This was all laid out in affidavits for search warrants that we obtained previously. We also know from our prior reporting that Lee Chatfield's siblings, two of his brothers and a sister-in-law, obtained jobs in 2020 while he was Speaker of the House with a marijuana business that was represented by GCSI. The CEO of that business was eventually Lee Chatfield's guest of honor at a State of the State address. We've reported this previously. in our news story that appeared on Monday, we've uncovered a few other things. Lee Chatfield, for 6 years, was renting an apartment in downtown Lansing from another GCSI client, the Automobile Dealers Association. So we know that while he was having the ability to decide whether bills affecting auto dealers would get votes in the state house, the auto dealers were effectively his landlord. So all of these things put together, and there are others involving some of the pieces of legislation that he put forward, all of these things together, including food and dining, you know, he received thousands of dollars in food purchases from GCSI and their lobbyists while he was speaker. All of these things put together paint a picture about this connection between the most powerful lawmaker in the House and one of the most powerful lobbying firms in the state.
I'm talking with Craig Mauger, who's a reporter for the Detroit News, and Rick Pluta, who is a senior capital correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network. We're talking about the unfolding scandal around former Speaker of the House Lee Chatfield in Lansing. And we're also, of course, talking about how that fits into the context of the relationships that exist in Lansing between the people we elect to go there and pass legislation and do things on our behalf, and people who are there sort of as advocates, paid advocates for special interests in the state, lobbyists, something that goes on in every legislative context. There are real questions, I think, about the lines that exist currently between legislators and lobbyists, and what those lines maybe should look like. The scandal that Chatfield finds himself at the center of really reminds us of some things that probably need tightening up. We would love to hear from you during the conversation as well. Give us a call and let us know what you are making of the news as it develops in this scandal around Lee Chatfield. Do you think this is a sign that we need to really rethink the relationship in Lansing between our elected officials and paid advocates and lobbyists? Do you think there is more we can do as citizens here to try to hold them accountable? We did do something pretty important on November 8th, passing a constitutional change that will require more transparency on the part of legislators. Are there other things that you think we ought to be thinking about doing? And what do you think legislators themselves ought to be thinking about doing? There is a running debate in Lansing about how to and whether to tighten up transparency and ethics rules. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Rick Pluta, I want to bring you into the conversation here just to first get your reaction to what's happening in the story about former Speaker Chatfield, but also to put this into some historical context. You and I have been around the state a fair amount of time. I have a hard time kind of remembering something quite on this scale at this level. In other words, something in the Speaker's office or in the Senate Majority Leader's office that that gets to this level of concern about this relationship between our elected officials and lobbyists. But I'm eager to hear what your reaction is to that and what context you see around it.
Sure. First of all, props to Craig on his reporting. What we're seeing here is, I guess, simultaneously unusual and not uncommon that, everybody has a lobbyist in Lansing, no matter what you do. If you're a farmer, you have at least one lobbyist. If you're a large business, you have a lobbyist. If you're a small business, you have a lobbyist. Journalists have lobbyists in Lansing.
Absolutely.
We have the Press Association and the Association of Broadcasters that look out for things that are of interest to media organizations, including some big lobbying for open government laws, which is what we're, what we're talking about here. And I just wanted to, throw that little bit of perspective in there. But what we're really focused on here is the influence of multi-client firms, which isn't a recent development, although, you know, in my 30 years in Lansing, it's been on the ascent. Very often, the principals who are at the top of it are either former legislative staffers or former legislators. GCSI was started by two former legislators to be a multi-client bipartisan lobbying firm, which is that it didn't focus on issues that leaned to the right or to the left, but they took on, paying clients. Multi-client firms, basically their business is relationships, mm-hmm. that they will, along the way, the people who are, you know, at the top of the organization will pick out, and remember, we're a term limit state, so people aren't around, you know, all that long, that they will pick out people that they consider up-and-comers and groom them for more responsible positions as committee chairs. And then eventually, you know, obviously the golden ticket would be, House Speaker or Senate Majority Leader. I mean, I could go on, but I think that maybe sort of sets the stage.
Yeah. And historically, have we seen this level of allegation, I guess, or accusation against someone as powerful as the former speaker? I mean, there is something about, as Craig says, you know, the power that he wielded to get things done that makes his involvement with this firm of greater concern.
Yeah, power is a great thing or an awful thing, depending on what you're doing with it. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you want legislative leadership that can be effective in moving difficult, sometimes controversial things, depending on the purpose. Is it for your constituents? Is it for the welfare of the state writ large, or is it to benefit people who are behind you and that you're close to for some reason? There was a saying, I haven't heard it much of late, but one of the things that I was informed that a good lobbyist will do when advising lawmakers, and remember, lobbyists are in many respects the institutional memory of Lansing. And, one of the bits of advice was the three C's, that your priorities are conscience, constituents, caucus, meaning, you know, what you think is right and wrong, the people that you're representing. And then and only then are you, you're focused on helping out the party that you are part of in the legislature. And, the lobbying corps, and I don't mean to, indict them, as a group, because just like anyone, there are good ones, bad ones, more mercenary, less mercenary lobbyists. But they are, also your lobbying firm is part of who identifies you, or maybe part of who identifies you as a legislator.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Craig Mauger and Rick Pluta about Lansing and about legislators and lobbyists. Want to get going on the phones and on social? Give us a call. Tell us what you make of this scandal unfolding around the former Speaker of the House, Lee Chatfield. What you make of the relationship between legislators and lobbyists in Lansing. Do you feel like money has too much influence over our elected officials? What would we do about that? We did have a referendum on the ballot just in November, but do we need more? And do we need legislators to take more initiative themselves? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also hashtag us on Twitter. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your connection to what's happening in Detroit.
WDET is your place for open dialogue about the issues that impact you.
Stay in the know.
This is WDET FM,
Detroit's NPR station.
Thank you.
101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. I got two great guests right now. Craig Mauger is a reporter for the Detroit News, covers state government and politics. He recently wrote a piece about how former state rep and Speaker of the House Lee Chatfield provided a foothold in state government for lobbyists that certainly raises eyebrows in the ethical context and may be raising eyebrows in a criminal context as well. Also with us is Rick Pluta, senior state capitol correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network. He has covered Lansing for more than 30 years and understands how this fits into the history of this relationship between legislators and lobbyists. We want to hear from you as well. Our listeners, give us a call and let us know what you make of these stories that have been appearing for a while now about the conduct that that former Speaker Chatfield is alleged to have indulged while he was in the legislature. Also, give us a sense of what you think about this relationship between legislators and lobbyists. Is it drawn properly, not only by the Constitution but also by rules in the legislature itself? Should we be thinking of other things that we require of legislators in terms of divulging their relationships with lobbyists? Should we require more in terms of the limitations of those relationships? Should we say some things need to be off the table, out of bounds? Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number. 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag us, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Before we get to our listeners, Craig, I do want to talk about this new set of rules that's going to exist because of what voters decided here on November 8th, Prop 2, in addition to changing term limits, also is going to require more transparency on the part of lawmakers. But I also want to talk about the debate inside the legislature itself about these things. That's been going on for some time, and there are some advocates in the chambers for tighter restrictions on this. But let's first start with what voters decided a month ago.
Yeah, so voters decided on November 8th to alter Michigan's term limits law to effectively give lawmakers more time in an individual chamber instead of having to have shorter term limits in the House and the Senate and being able to kind of combine serving in both to equal a longer stay in Lansing. Now you can spend longer in just the House or longer in just the Senate. But with that, one of the sweeteners thrown into this proposal was a requirement that Michigan would begin having financial disclosures from lawmakers and state office holders. We have been one of two states, shockingly, one of only two states in the country that don't require any type of financial disclosure of a personal nature from state office holders. Mm-hmm. And what does this mean on the ground? It means that, you know, if a lawmaker is invested in a large business or runs a business, they don't have to report that to anyone, or if they're employed on the side by a particular entity while serving in the legislature, they don't have to report that to anyone. If they have a financial arrangement with someone, perhaps even a lobbyist, they don't have to report that to anyone. These disclosures could require lawmakers to begin disclosing these things. However, it's going to depend on how they craft the legislation to require these disclosures. And it's ultimately up to the lawmakers to set those policies. I mean, this is not necessarily by any stretch of the imagination going to end up being a victory for transparency, because it's very possible that lawmakers will set a policy that says, hey, our financial disclosures are going to be our campaign finance statements and lobbyist reports that are already available. We're just going to duplicate public information that's already out there. And people might say, no, they're not going to do that. Yes, that's a very real possibility that they could do that under what was approved. Yeah. And that shouldn't be downplayed.
Yeah. Rick, we've had debates in Lansing before about tighter ethics restrictions. We've had governors also promise to bring more transparency, not only to to the legislature, but also to the governor's office, to talk about where those things might play a role in this debate about what voters have decided they want to do with Prop 2.
Well, I mean, one person's transparency is another person's invasion of privacy.
Right.
And that's been, you know, Senate Majority Leader's Mike Shirky's position, you know, about this, which is that, you know, people have lives and interests outside the legislature that shouldn't necessarily be used as political cudgels against them, which is a fair point. But you're going to err on one side or the other when you are crafting policies like this. And I guess from a citizen's perspective, they might say, well, you know, if I'm the employer, if I am, you know, if this were a service that I was paying for, what would I want to know about the service provider? And I would think that conflicts of interest would certainly be among them. I guess financial disclosure and business interests, you know, are sort of an intriguing place to explore, I guess, because on the one hand, you don't want legislators going to Lansing and voting for things that, you know, in order to improve the prospects for a business that they own. But a lot of lawmakers go to Lansing campaigning on the fact that they've got experience in those areas. I mean, one that comes to mind is Tommy Brand, whose family owns a well-known restaurant in West Michigan, and he refers all the time to, you know, the business side of running his restaurant and what COVID restrictions, for example, you know, meant for them. That sometimes, you know, the business is a, you know, the outside interest is a credential. Sometimes it's a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Again, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. Call and tell us what you make of this debate about the line between legislators and lobbyists in Lansing. Also give us a call and let us know if you even just have questions about how lobbying works in Lansing, what corruption looks like, you know, what's the line between the sort of legal advocacy on behalf of private interests and buying or, you know, inappropriately currying favor with legislators. We've got two really thoughtful guests who have a lot of experience looking at these questions with us, who will probably have good answers to those questions. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you in. Let's start with Bernadette in Old Redford today. Bernadette, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hey.
What the voters want, it seems like the legislators find a way to get around. When we wanted term limits so that we didn't have legislators who had long years of influence with, you know, possible lobbyists, it turns out that what they do when they're in office is start looking for their next job. But my main point was the relationship between the lobbyists and this pipeline in northern Michigan that doesn't so much benefit Michiganders. How many, you know, and what they did in the lame duck session to push it through, even though voters don't want it?
Yeah. Great questions, Bernadette. And you're right. It does seem like voters' interests and will get confounded sometimes by the behavior of legislators behind some of the things that we do. That's an interesting way to think of term limits, which we adopted almost 30 years ago and now are trying to rethink because they haven't worked the way I think that voters thought they would. But that question about line five and the advocacy there, I think, is a really interesting one. Craig, that's an issue you have followed for a long time, both as a journalist and as somebody who was watchdogging the relationship between, you know, legislators and lobbyists well before that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's just an incredible amount that we don't know about what influences these decisions. And as Rick was talking, he raised a lot of solid points about weighing transparency versus an invasion of privacy. And he mentioned an example of a restaurant owner But in that example, we all knew that he owned a restaurant. I mean, he couldn't hide from that. His name is on the front of the restaurant. He ran as a business owner for the office and was very transparent about what was driving him. And he shared numerous stories on the House floor about how his relationship with that restaurant did impact his policy decisions. And there are numerous instances where we just don't get to know with other lawmakers what is impacted in their policy decisions. Do they, when they vote on whether how solar panels should be handled by utilities and whether other utility customers should have to pick up some of the tab of those solar panel customers, do these lawmakers have solar panels at their homes on which they're making money off of? We don't know that. Do lawmakers receive contributions through nonprofit accounts from some entities that could benefit from Line 5? We don't know that because our transparency laws have been set up in such a way to hide those details. I mean, these are just facts of where we are. And if we are not honest about these facts of what we do not know, I mean, as reporters, you know, I go through this a lot. I want to know everything. But the fact is that I don't know everything, and I've got to be honest about what I don't know. And there's a lot I don't know in all of these situations.
Yeah, yeah. Rick, what about how much we know, you know, about these relationships and how much we should know?
Oh, I mean, and Craig's absolutely right. I mean, Tommy Brand is a great example of someone who, you know, wore his heart on his sleeve in terms of, you know, why he was there. And we have the same with, you know, doctors and nurses who, you know, show up in Lansing. Certainly, attorneys spend a lot of time dealing with things that address aspects of, you know, of their practices. And, you know, they all, everybody knows who they are. You know, side businesses, and I think this sort of gets into, you know, the Lee Chatfield situation, that most multi-client lobbying firms also have reception rooms that they rent to legislators and candidates for fundraising receptions. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's just, you know, one example of it. And, you know, that can be a relationship benefit to an elected official and to a, you know, to a lobbying firm that, you know, we don't know, and I don't know that, you know, we necessarily need to know, you know, every, you know, snack that's paid for by a lobbying firm. On all-night sessions of the legislature, lobbying firms will also either individually or collectively pay for food and snacks to be delivered to the, you know, to the legislature or in the Capitol. And full disclosure, on all-night sessions, I have eaten some of those snacks. Just putting that out there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of ways. I remember, you know, early on, one of the things that a lobbyist, you know, told me was that this place couldn't operate without lobbyists. And that is true. The question is, you know, what are the lobbyists doing and how are they managing the fact that they have the ears of, you know, of very important people?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Bernadette, really appreciate the call and the questions. Let's go next to Charlie in Southfield. Charlie, what's on your mind?
Well, I wondered, are there any states or other countries, democracies that don't have lobbyists? And are there any regulations on what lobbyists can and can't do?
Yeah, that's actually a great question, Charlie. Craig, as you mentioned earlier, look, we've got a constitutional right to petition for a redress of grievances. It's part of the First Amendment. Also protects the press, of course. But are there places that that we don't have lobbyists in quite the same way that we have here? And what are the rules, I guess, that govern that relationship?
Yeah, I mean, there are rules in Michigan that regulate what lobbyists can do. There's a broad thought that these rules were written by lobbyists in Michigan, so there is not a ton there, but they have to disclose food purchases that they make for state lawmakers or state office holders like the governor or department head over a certain amount each month. If they go over $66 in a month for a certain lawmaker, they have to report that twice a year. They have to report trips that they purchase for lawmakers twice a year over certain thresholds. They have to report financial transactions that they have with lawmakers over a certain threshold. You know, one of the issues is that these lobbyist policies in Michigan were written many decades ago. I think a lot of them date back to the 1970s, and they have not been updated. And what has happened with legislators since that time is there's been an immense amount of new money coming into politics trying to impact races, and lawmakers have set up new ways in which to hide things from the public. Back in the 1970s, we didn't have a situation where a large portion of the lawmakers had a nonprofit fundraising account through which they can raise money from secret donors and not disclose what they're spending it on. So what we've seen in those, you know, the broad reports that they have to file, they're very vague and don't provide a lot of information. We see those nonprofits often being used for travel and food. So why would you take a, you know, meal from a lobbyist when that has to be disclosed and some annoying person like I will report it when you could hide it by, you know, running it through a nonprofit account? Our system of disclosures have not been set up to navigate this arrangement. Other states have more, you know, robust disclosure regimes or ethics policies that prevent lawmakers from having an association with these type of nonprofit accounts. Other states have financial disclosures where all trips that you receive, whether it's funded by a lobbyist or funded by a nonprofit account or funded by some entity that is not a lobbyist but very clearly seems to be doing lobbying, you have to disclose all of that, or you have to disclose all the free meals that you take from, you know, entities that could be seeking to sway your vote, whether they are regulated lobbyists or not. You know, I got to state that, you know, Michigan was rated 50th of 50 states for its transparency policies by the Center for Public Integrity a few years ago. So our laws are different and generally considered weaker than what other states have.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, one of the things we don't. I would say one of the things we don't have, for example, is what's called a revolving door law that requires a period of time before an elected official can leave office and then go to work for an entity that that person was, you know, until recently, you know, voting on policies that would cover them.
Yeah. Okay. Rick Pluta and Craig Mauger. Great to have both of you here to talk about this issue. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks for asking.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to stay on the topic of politics, but pivot to what's going on in Washington with new leadership arriving in the House of Representatives. And we'll be right back with more Detroit Today.